This is part two of our discussion on the 2026 local government election with Sunday Times investigative journalist Sabelo Sekete and News 24 deputy politics editor Bongekile Macupe and former government spokesperson and political commentator Maihlo Mechwete. What do voters in Gauteng really want to see and hear going into the local government election campaigns? And was that councillor's roll call at FNB Stadium a good idea or not? This is an exciting conversation, right? And I really want us to spend a little bit of time and focus having a conversation about probably what is going to be the most highly contested metropolitan in next year's election. Tshwane, Joburg, Ekurhuleni. Because this is the heartbeat of South Africa's economy, right? And Maya, I want to start with you. You were at the end of the last episode framing how the deterioration of the caliber of candidate that's been fielded for Johannesburg. Do you just sort of talk to us a little bit about your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, we come from Gauteng being the province that fielded, you know, charismatic, exciting people like Tokyo Sekwala. We had senior guys as mayors. So we have a history of prioritizing Gauteng and making sure, because of the reasons you've stated, that it's well represented in terms of its leadership. But I think most people feel in the last couple of years, the city of Joburg doesn't have that element anymore. It seems like we've seen so many candidates come up as mayors, and they just don't, even on a PR level, don't resonate, right? We can get into their work and whether or not they achieved anything. So we've lost a lot of appeal as a result of that. And as a person looking out, and if I was to give constructive criticism to any political party that runs City of Joburg and the other municipalities you've mentioned, is prioritize this thing, value it, field candidates that you probably think you're overdoing it. So I think that's what the DA probably thinks they're doing, but field candidates that you think this guy is too big for this job. Don't come with random mayors that we don't know, that don't resonate with voters. And don't give us confidence in terms of the programs that they do to develop the city. And I just want to add an element to this, is that I don't want to be overcritical, because I've had the pleasure of living in Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Gauteng. Very different cities. And I think the two that have changed the most is probably the Western Cape and Gauteng. Even at an infrastructure level. I mean, the Gautrain and all these things that weren't there before, they are now there. And Western Cape has changed tremendously, the waterfront and all of the developments that have happened. I think where Western Cape beats Gauteng is that it adds on to its infrastructure. Fine, we can say it's in certain areas that are of a certain complexion, but it adds on to its infrastructure without losing too much. Whereas Gauteng develops, loses. So we create nice infrastructure in the Gauteng, our CBD has become something else.
So you think the bright lights of Maboneng have dimmed? Bongi, in your experience, and because you are in the field of journalism quite often having conversations with the people on the ground, what do you feel is the biggest outcry in terms of what it is that has dimmed the lights of Maboneng?
I think the biggest outcry, we all sit here as, I think, owners, ratepayers. The biggest outcry is that we are not getting services. And I think for me, my Hlomo was talking about you must field someone who is bigger, that you think is bigger than the role. And I actually thought of Denny Yordan. That at some point, the ANC thought Denny Yordan was going to save Nelson Mandela Bay. I mean, look, they thought that he was going to do that. Yeah. And for me, I don't think it's about I mean, I think the personality, yes, because you see that with Nasipe, she's on the ground, she does what she does. I also think it's also like the team that you surround with. It's the MMCs, it's the people that in the offices, do they want to do the job, you know? And that's why I am very skeptical of Helen Zille as the savior that is coming to save Joburg, because I'm like, sure, but also my reservations about Helen Zille and what the DA is doing is that, one, you are saying that it's a vote of no confidence in the Gauteng leadership of the DA, right? Because you are saying Esoli, for example, can't do the job. That is why you are going to fetch someone who is now staying at their sister's cottage to come and save Joburg, right? A 74-year-old. We also have to say that and not leave it for ANC politicians, because we always are ageist when it comes to ANC, a 74-year-old. And I don't think Helen Zille is going to be the savior of Johannesburg. Yes, she does have the experience of leading City of Cape Town. She does have the experience of being a leading Western Cape. You can't take that away from her, and you can't take away the fact that she's a skilled politician, integral in the formation of the GNU. But also, I think we can never remove or deassociate her problematic politics. And I don't think in the quest of me as a red payer in South Africa, I am going in the city of Johannesburg, I am going to overlook the fact that Helen has problematic politics and suddenly want to vote for her because when I drive out of my house, I don't want to hit a pothole or I don't want to go for 2 days without water. Yes, on paper, it looks good, but I also don't agree with this thing that when it comes to local government, people suddenly they switch their ideological politics and suddenly are like, you are going to a person who this week said genocide is a big word when it refers to Gaza. I'm suddenly gonna, like, I am not against what Israel is doing. I'm gonna look away because I think Helen is going to save Johannesburg. So I think Helen comes with a lot of baggage, and I know that there are some quarters in our city who are frustrated, like all of us are, who are excited for her to come and be the savior of the city. But honestly, I don't think that people in Soweto, which is the biggest region, the biggest voting bloc in the city of Johannesburg, is suddenly going to ditch the ANC or whoever they were voting for and vote for Helen Zille.
You spoke about the fact that the media is also not having the conversations that allow the electorate to think broadly about who's on their ballot. Yeah. If you had a magic wand, what do you think the top three issues that we should be talking about all the time to alert voters?
Well, to me, it would definitely be, the top two would be delivery. Mm-hmm. So for the city of Joburg, for Ekurhuleni, for city of Tshwane, water, electricity. And then I think for me, the one, and I think in terms of importance is probably as important, is local economic development. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? How are we going to get these cities working again? Mm-hmm. You know? Those three for me are probably the most important, and I think I agree to a certain degree with Boegila, but I also disagree vehemently when it comes to you know, Helen's views on Gaza and Helen's views on even, you know, refugees and all of that. Is something that matters to me when I'm thinking Democratic Alliance. You know, what sort of beast is this? Is this a party that I think can take South Africa forward? It matters in that sense. But for me, when I'm thinking about local government, it's literally that thing of like, am I going to be able to wake up in the morning, get the kids clean, fed, off to school, off me, off to work? Because if those things don't happen, then it disrupts a lot in my life. And those things are very personal to me, because I then feel the disruption. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm sitting in traffic and the traffic lights don't work, and then those insurance guys are not there, I'm frustrated now. You know what I mean? And if someone can come to me and say, hey, listen, I can sort these things out for you. That other stuff matters less. It does matter, but it will matter less because
it means it was never your conviction.
I'd rather look. There's convictions. There's conviction. Then there's convictions, and then there's like practicality.
I actually disagree with you quite vehemently because I think in terms of convictions, I think those convictions are ones that sit in air-conditioned rooms like this. I think when you are a young person who is in grade 12. Frustrated about not getting into varsity, you're 18 years old, here's a voting opportunity. If you're a 22-year-old who hasn't worked, you don't give a shit.
Okay.
You are literally, you don't even know where those places are, right? If you have a drug problem, if you have a kid who's got a drug problem, if you have a homeless person outside of your house, you definitely...
It's just genocide. I agree with Bongi, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's fine.
I'll come after
you. You can't remove those things, a person's ideologic makeup, from how they deliver services. So if a person doesn't have a very high regard of a certain section of the population, but you are under the view that you'll have your water running and you'll have your lights on and blah, 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 their ideology and how they look at people that live in Khayelitsha and the kind of services they receive versus people that live on the Atlantic seaboard and the kind of services they receive. If they can draw a distinction between the two and value this one more, for whatever reasons they give, oh, this one pays rates, blah, 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 and this one is not useful to us. So if a person's mentality is that brown people are of, we can deal with brown people later, it's not a priority. These ones are a priority. That's an impact on the basic service delivery things you're speaking about.
Absolutely.
And if the person decides that, Bona, they're going to invest in predominantly white areas, that's an underlying ideological issue that plays itself out on these basic levels that you guys are speaking about. So I don't want to say that ideology is the most important thing, because that's also another extreme. But I think somewhere in there must be a balance of a person lives within South Africa, understands that a black person deserves just as good services as a white person deserves. But if a person has weird worldviews that kind of underline this view that she doesn't really think highly of black people as opposed to white people, I think it impacts the kind of services she gives you. And Cape Town is a case in point of this.
I'm saying if you've never been to Cape Town, you don't know where Khayelitsha is. And you are living in Soweto, in the biggest voting block in Johannesburg. Things you're just kind of going, loko kolona, bathi e Cape Town ugunje. And this is what they say. Will impact on whether people show up.
Yeah.
Will impact on who they vote for. And if you are sitting with a councillor that you are going, in the past 10 years, Lomuntu has been our councillor, what have they done?
True. I think I also have to agree with how we always frame voters, especially abogogo, like you say, because we act as though labantu laba, they don't watch news. One, we act as though these people haven't lived through this country and have seen how, like Maihlome was saying, how black versus white is being treated. We sort of like want to think for abantu base Soweto to say abantu base Soweto, they don't care about the Gaza issue. Abantu Soweto, their convictions are not strong, and I disagree with that. I think Maihlome, the ideological question, you've covered it well. I want to come to what you speak about, like for example, an 18-year-old who's going to vote and how they don't care and they've lived through democracy in there. And we've seen the voting patterns in South Africa that young people stay away; they don't go to vote. We've seen also with national elections that people will rather stay away than go and vote for the DA, because if they agreed and they thought, because the DA has been selling us this thing since they took over Western Cape, that we are the best way we govern. And if South Africans were convinced, and because the majority of the people that vote are the elderly, if they were convinced in the Eastern Cape, in Limpopo, we would have people voting for the DA. But that tells you that people would rather stay away than vote for a party that they know is going to alienate them, than vote for a party that they know that in the city. I've been to Khayelitsha, by the way, and I think other people, you don't have to go to know that the DA doesn't service all the all the communities the same, and for people to naively think that Helen Zille is going to come here and care about Alexander first and care about South Africa first, I think we are being naive.
No, I look, and I'm fascinated by the fact that this conversation, it seems to be revolving around an ANC that hasn't delivered and a DA that potentially could, may not, ideological, and we're not talking about, we're not talking about BOSA, we're not talking about RISE, we're not talking about EFF, we're not talking about IFP, we're not talking about, and here in Joburg in particular, where we have now had not one but two mayors that were fielded by Al Jama. These are the dynamics, right? And we're not having that conversation about those people.
Yeah. Look, I agree 100% with Ubongagile no Michael. Agree 100%. But I think the perspective I'm coming from is one that simply says, when you get to a local level, ideology matters, yes. But you then become willing to say, this ideology maybe is not the most important thing for me. You know what I mean? Like, you will sit there and you will say, these people that you see marching for Gaza and marching, you know, are the same people that are refusing to listen to me when I'm calling them and I'm saying that, guys, we have had no electricity for 2 weeks. It's the same, guys. In fact, you are more likely to see them when they go to those marches. You know what I mean? As opposed to actually dealing with a problem at the local community level. So I think.
But that's why they have
the sort of approach that we have.
That's why they had the roll call.
I suppose at the rally there's a roll call.
Let's talk about the roll call because here I have two people who come from who were part of the people who were inside in the room, who were not, some of us only got to hear the perspective of media of what was happening in that roll call. Let's talk about the roll call. What did you think about the roll call? What does it mean?
I like
it. Is it a launch of a campaign? You liked it?
No,
what did you like?
I mean, look, man. So the ANC finds itself in a bit of a predicament, right? And you can see that they're nervous. And this hasn't happened in a long time. So this thing comes as a result of them saying, it's not business as usual. We have to do things differently. If we don't do things differently, we are all going to be out of power, and some of you are going to be out of employment. So people are throwing shade at them, but I think in their defense, it was the right thing to do. It shows that they realize that their best days are behind them. They have to work differently to secure their votes. And they're being introspective, and they're saying, guys, we're not doing good enough. Whether it was smart to have media in the room while you saying that is a different. No, I mean, listen, the DA. No, hang on.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
no,
I'm
let me. Sorry. The DA.
I don't think we are giving the ANC way too much recognition for nothing.
Chini.
These guys did this thing only because it was the only thing they could do. They can't go and say, because they will have to say, at Northwest, we've literally killed all the municipalities.
Yeah.
We've killed them so much that businesses have now left and they've moved to other provinces because they can't operate in that local government environment. They will have to say, in the Eastern Cape, people are killing each other for councillor positions. You know what I mean? You've got metros that are in steady, not even steady decline anymore. You know, you've got tire manufacturers and people that have been in Nelson Mandela Bay for years that are leaving. And part of the reason they are leaving is because at a local level, you can't even take care of them. That's what they will say if they don't do a roll call. They needed to have the media there because the only thing the president could say is something that makes him look like he's marshalling these guys and is saying something shocking to them. If he wanted to say something shocking to them, no, he's not.
I want.
He's just saying
that
you guys are singing. Yeah. He's not even saying that you guys are sleeping with young women for jobs in municipalities. You guys are employing your friends that are unemployed in key positions in municipalities. You guys are taking entire budgets and you're handing them over to your friends so that you can have nice drinks at the club on the weekend. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's not saying that.
Exactly.
He's simply saying that you must be more like the DA. He doesn't even articulate what the DA is.
Does. I want to start with what my... I agree with you. So I want to say to start with what Mai says. My colleague Siyamthanda Kapa wrote in the in News 24 last Friday because she was in the room, and she characterized what was happening. One thing about comrades, they like meeting. They like being in the same room. Like, it gives them a rush. They like meeting. And they haven't met in a long time, right?
Especially
because they haven't met in a long time. So that was that. It was just comrades meeting and singing before Gwede said stop singing. Because for me, and she writes about this because she was there, and the councillors themselves, they say, we do not know why we were here. Because we thought that we were going to sit, discuss, but we were talked down to, you have to do this. There was no discussion. There was no open discussion about the kind of municipalities we are working at compared to the DA or whatever. There was no talk about councillors are being killed. It was literally a thing of all these people, these talking heads, just talking to the councillors. And one of the councillors that she spoke to actually said, I actually expected an even harsher rebuke of the work that we are doing, but that didn't happen. So that thing was a waste of time, because right now they had that thing, but you still had the NEC still going to regions and provinces to communicate what we... That thing could have been held at provincial level if they were serious.
Email.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But so it was just a thing of us, let us meet. And exactly what Sabelo is saying, Mana, there is nothing that Ramaphosa said that those people don't know. When they boarded the planes, when they got into the buses, they know exactly what they are not doing. We can't be talking about Dijobotla for 10 years. You know exactly. I was in the Eastern Cape this weekend and driving through East London. I mean, I'm not very familiar with East London like they are, but I was shocked. It's the place is dull. They, like, now there's currently a strike, but you can see even without a strike, the place is run down. And that's one of the few, one of two metros that the ANC leads currently. So you can't tell me that we are going to call a wrong. And I think I said somewhere that it's actually even too late. They know that it's too late. There's nothing that they can salvage.
But we agree.
Nothing they can salvage.
But we agree that they are nervous.
Yeah, they are nervous.
We agree. Because my point was that if there's two alternatives, them functioning as though it's business as usual, or them
but
doing
they
this,
have been, my
fair.
They have been.
Fair.
But I want to say, what was the last conference? When was the renewal thing introduced?
2017.
We are now in 2025.
I definitely agree.
Is there anything that the ANC has done that suggests that they want to renew? They lost the elections last year. Is there anything? Okay, sorry, Mike. Continue with your point. Yes.
I want to ask a question about the other parties too.
Okay,
so
yeah.
The smaller parties.
And so let me just say this about the ANC. I don't defend them.
Yeah,
I want to clarify.
You don't have to. I don't.
And the point I was making is that there's an acknowledgement on their side.
Yeah.
That the forecast of what the local elections are is not good. So whether they're being sincere in the things they're doing or they're just doing it for to look like they're doing something is a debate, and it's a point that you're making. But to the other point that you're making about other parties, I think one of the best things for the ANC is that we don't really have a position that's shooting the lights out. So even if you are frustrated with the ANC, where are you going to place your voice for that, for them to also to count? Because there's a bit of game theory here that, fine, maybe you like Song Ezozibi and you think he's a good guy, you think he's articulate, you think he's intelligent, but you're going to cast a vote there and you're going to get 3%, 2%, and then that's that. So you've practically played with the vote. The options that you really have is between ANC, EFF, DA, and maybe MK.
And IFP, maybe.
No.
If you stretch it.
it's these four.
So then three of those four parties you've named are essentially one thing.
Yeah. So I think it works out well for the ANC that there isn't really like an amazing person, a dynamic, new, amazing person on the scene that's grabbing votes from the ANC and who's trying to drive a new way forward.
What do you mean it's working well for them?
As in it works in their favor. That the opposition is not
united.
Not only united,
there
but exciting.
Isn't a strong,
exciting.
The only thing that gave them a bit of a hiccup was the MK, the coming of the MK. But for the most part, and there isn't a fear of the DA taking all of the ANC's votes. That's not going to happen.
They have that the arrogance of knowing that we don't have someone that
you
can literally kill us.
You don't have options. Yeah. You don't have options for you to say, look, I want something similar to the ANC in policy, but I want a leadership that can execute. Where can I find that?
So one thing we haven't spoken about is and for many years, in the past 10 years, the idea and this big word of corruption. And in this conversation, not once have we mentioned even the word corruption, right? Do you think it still plays a role in the heads of the voters that, you know, there is this beast? And this beast is the problem, and who is responsible for this big C-word?
I don't even think it's a thing of us having to speak about it. I think it's literally kufana no perfumla. You don't say in their perfumla. Corruption is so ingrained in the politics of the ANC and of our country in the past 31 years that it's an extension of the ANC. So you don't even have to spell it out. And the ANC knows it. There's a young boy who spoke in the Eastern Cape. I think he's the secretary or the spokesperson of the ANC Youth League. He was speaking off the cuff, waiting for the president of the ANC. And he characterized it so well. He's like, all of us, when we stand on platforms, we speak about the corruption is the cancer that's eating us. But none of, and he's like, all of us that corrupt as comrades. He's like a young boy who works for a municipality is driving the most expensive car, and you ask yourself, but comrade, we have the same job. How are you affording that car? So the corruption is who the ANC is.
No, but
I'm sorry.
Corruption is
corruption is who.
Let me conclude.
Corruption is, and they know that the fact that they lost elections last year is not. It's not because of anything. It's not because even the MKP, yes, to some degree, it stole their votes. But the people that didn't go out and vote is because they are sick and tired of corruption. It's synonymous with the ANC.
The only thing I would add to what Bongi is saying is that it's across political parties. Because even when our brother Solly was speaking about the corruption, you know, he wasn't speaking about the corruption that's been found in DA-governed municipalities, which happens. So I think the most infuriating thing about politics is that everybody speaks of a problem as though it exists on the other side. Mm-hmm. So the EFF thinks the ANC is corrupt. The ANC thinks EFF is corrupt. The DA thinks MK is corrupt. And we, as voters, are just sitting there watching this finger pointing. That's why we like Bong is saying it. We don't have to delve into it. It's now become a political tagline.
But the difference, I'm gonna lose this point. The difference between the EFF, the DA, and all these other parties we are talking about, they haven't been in government for 31 years. So we are not going to spend our time saying that
right.
Julius is corrupt, is allegedly corrupt,
right.
or whoever. We can say Zuma. Or the people in Zuma's party, because at some point they were part of the state, and the reason why they ended up being outside is because of corruption. But we are not going to waste our time and speak right. about corruption in parties that you characterize as small parties with 2%. We speak about a party that leads the country.
If we're going to say conviction when it comes to political ideology is a big thing, then whether you are corrupt or not as a candidate is also a big thing.
Yeah.
I think.
But wait, how do you? Not to be like, but how do you decide a candidate is corrupt or not corrupt, unless he's been convicted of corruption? Do you think there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that suggests this guy has to be?
No, that argument, it only works when comrades are sitting together. That's something that they say to make each other feel good about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If
we can see it, you know what I mean? If we can see the corruption, we can definitely draw a straight line between that water tender and you as the official that signed off that water tender buying an AMG Mercedes or whatever other car. I'm sorry, I'm not disparaging Mercedes.
Anybody that's in cloud shouldn't stand for any position.
No, not cloud.
Yeah, under cloud of...
The stuff that we can see.
Right.
Yeah, well, the stuff, because that thing is what has allowed some guys to rise to prominence in government over years, having never worked a day in their life. They are not businessmen. They don't claim to be businessmen. Right. And yet they live in houses that are in the tens of millions of rands. These people will climb throughout the years. Everywhere someone questions something, they say, I've not been found guilty.
Exactly.
Now, the latest thing they say now is that if you think a crime has been committed, go open a case. You know what I mean? But when we speak in reality, and I think this is why we need to sort of have it said this way here, because we're speaking here as, you know, sort of voters, and we're talking in that sort of context. For me, it's enough. When I see you and your lifestyle doesn't match your income, and on top of that, you then can't put me at ease about your sources of income.
Yes.
No,
then you will create doubt in my head.
I want to say this, Ukolomai. I want to say, I said this the other time, that I've been working as a journalist for 15 years, and there are kids who used to be in FISMA's fall. I used to cover them when they were still students. And I say to you, I've been working for 15 years. The kind of lives that they live, I'm not even near.
You should have joined FISMA's fall.
I'm not even talking about those who are in parliament or whatever that you can say, oh, this person ends whatever. Mm. It's like kids that you used to interview, and suddenly they found themselves somewhere, and WhatsApp is saying that their lifestyle doesn't match. You just started working 5 years ago.
I think one of the things we've probably failed as a society, and it's strange that we failed in this because of the high levels of unemployment, is if you get a job working for a municipality, working for government, and you're earning a secure salary, 25,000, 35,000, 45,000, that should be enough for you to try create an existence for yourself and then work yourself up.
Yeah.
You shouldn't think, hey, I'm only earning this much, but this businessman on the outside is making this amount of money. So I need to find other ways to grow this thing. So in contrast to a country with high unemployment, some of the people who have jobs and have financial security within government just don't seem to value it. And they put it at risk because of this lifestyle competition that they're having with people on the outside and people who are business people. It's a very... Yeah. It's a very strange thing. So I'm fully in agreement with you guys about removing people that lifestyle doesn't match. But I just don't know who you would fail to get some.
To some of the other lifestyle audits. We're also waiting for those lifestyle audits. Yeah, I'm just going to put it out there because it has been said there will be lifestyle audits. We will see what people... So just as a closing, what do you think the voter... like me, who may not even be a homeowner, right? Mm. What are the things that when we're looking at who is being fielded, we should be absolutely critical about? To say, yeah, we have this one, if you had a magic wand, to say this is the kind of person we should be putting in those positions. I'm not going to start with you because that's where we started. I'm going to start with you, Subs, and then I'm going to come to you.
Only starting with me. Look, for me, the most important thing now is I must be careful how I say this.
Don't be.
Speak
freely.
We won't judge.
So my thing is, you need a no-nonsense person. Yeah. someone who understands administration, I think is very important now, because a lot of the problems we have in local government, in as much as we'll say it's the political instability, but the reality of it, I think Umay alluded to it a bit earlier, the reality of it is that these things happen because the systems in municipalities are dead. There's no accountability within the systems. There's no proper planning that informs how money is deployed. And, you know, if you don't have those systems to detect, then you'll never catch, you know, even this corruption that we say we want, you know, to uproot. Mm. So I want someone who's going to, number one, be very no-nonsense, and then also have a solid understanding of the architecture of local government. You know, that for me is going to be very key. And I think that's something that the voter should actually listen for and ask when these guys come knocking at their doors.
Yeah.
I think in addition to what Subs say, I'm going to just be very brief. And it's something that I've been thinking about. It could be pedestrian to some people. But I also think like someone who's patriotic, man. Someone who's going to say, I grew up in Soweto, the dusty seats of Soweto, and now I have been given this opportunity to leave a legacy that when my children grow up, when my grandkids grow up, they are going to say, oh, do you know, there's this swimming pool, for example, or this park, you know, was built because your grandfather did that in his time as a mayor, you know? And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot. Like, and I think I had said this on X to the mayor of Johannesburg, to say, if you grow up in Joburg, you were raised in Joburg, there must be some pride that I have been given this opportunity. My family name will one day be in the history of that a Joburg was turned around because of me. And that's why sometimes for some of us who grew up in Joburg, whatever, you'll still speak of an Amos Masondo, that in Amos Masondo's time, this and this happened. You know, I think for me also, for some people, it could be very pedestrian, but I also think that should be what also drives people, especially when you are given the responsibility of leading a nation, of leading a city, of leading a province, that this is your legacy. Like, your children's children will be like, yo, my grandfather did this, and that should give you, yeah. Oh, my grandmother, please, yes. Oh, my grandmother, not the other grandmother who is in the news.
I'm trying. We have enough problems. No, I think you know, in the past, the ANC had the privilege of an amazing brand that could run ahead of any candidate it fields, right? So they could take a Sabelo who had no political background, and they could put him on the ANC ticket, and he would get enough votes and he'd go into power. And I think the tides have clearly shifted now. And if I had to evaluate what I'd want from a candidate, I wouldn't expect the party to think I will vote for a person naturally because they are on the back of that banner. So what I want now is someone with a little bit of background. So all of the things that Bonge and Sabelo are saying, but somebody with a little background. So you're putting Mpumi to be the mayor of Johannesburg. Can you tell us what she has done? It doesn't have to be in business. It doesn't have to be in government. But can you tell us, oh, no, she used to run the biggest community group, and this is what these are the things they have achieved. You can't just bring a name, and this person is the biggest ticket he's ever had in his life for the first time. And you're putting him on a billion rand budget as a city of Joburg or Ekurhuleni or Tshwane. So I would want somebody with a little bit of a background, someone with a CV. And a CV that says, there's some competency here. This person can do something if they put their mind to it. That's all I'd want.
Sure. Those are some great. What I would want is more Joburgers standing up and putting their hand forward to say, I want to serve this city. More Pretorians, more Ekurhulenians, more Buffalo citizens, and everybody saying, I want to lead the city.
I want to learn what Bongile actually said, and I think it's a conversation that a lot of South Africans are scared to have because they don't want to be called xenophobic or whatever. And I think it's not necessarily about whether you're South African or not, but I'm just talking from that perspective of saying, I've always had a theory in my head that part of the reason you have the decay that you have in Johannesburg is that a lot of the people in Johannesburg are migrants. You know what I mean? People don't see themselves attached to Johannesburg in the long term. No one has a plan to retire. Everyone, at least a lot of the people that I come across, have a plan that entails them at some point having built up their wealth and having, you know, amassed assets and stuff, moving back home.
But back home doesn't look much better.
And, you know, no, but you remember, it's not their problem because they're not there, they're here, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, here, they are not truly attached to, you know? What matters is the now. You know, there's no thing that says that, what's the legacy for my kids? Because depending on what strata of society you're in, my kids might not even be in the country, or my kids might be back, you know, in the Eastern Cape, running what I have then come and built at the end of my working career. You know, I'd love to sort of see a study that looks at that sort of mentality. You know, is the reason that people are happy to loot R500 million from healthcare? Is it so easy for them because they know that in the end, ultimately, I don't have a grandmother who has to queue in a hospital here. And I'm not going to leave a kid who's going to have to contend with the problems of having to get to healthcare in the public sector here in Johannesburg. Because guess what? I'm not from here.
Is that going to be your PhD thesis?
do you know that I just want to... I know that we are rapping, and I want to say something.
Say it, baby.
So I, like I said, I traveled to the Eastern Cape, and I was in Mbashe municipality, Mbashe, Edutywa. And that's such a tiny municipality, and I don't know who the mayor is. I don't know where he's from, but I think he's probably a local. And guys, there's something that that person in that municipality is doing, and he's doing right. And I think it speaks to what I'm talking about legacy. You know, when you drive to small towns, it's always dirty. You can't see anything. When I drove through that small town, they have like those big bins where people can throw their rubbish. There's like also like small bins where you can throw your bottles and they've got like this massive mall that they've just opened. And they always like have activities that involve the people. And there's something that they are doing. And I think it speaks to exactly like that. I forget the name of the mayor, but he's living a legacy, and that's the kind of thing that you have to do. You must have pride. Uthiwe bana, hey, kwa phatu sabelo skiti apa, uba kaenge ngo sabelo skiti. And that is why we still have people saying, ngexesha lika Mandela. It's exactly that. It's like it's the pride and your name and your legacy. And like that small municipality, I think it's one municipality to watch. It's very small, tiny.
Andutua.
Yes, it's tiny. No one is.
I can't wait to see the AG's report on them.
But that's not the only thing that matters, Sabs. It's very important. It's not the only thing that matters. Yes.
And I don't even come from there. I don't care. I have nothing that ties me to that place. I just went and
You were driving through.
I was like, there's something that's happening here and we need to pay attention.
Wow, that's a wonderful place to end.